Welcome to the Nobody Told Me That podcast. My name is Teresa Duncan, and my goal is to share information that you probably weren't thinking about. I love preparing my friends for situations that may come completely out of the blue. I also want to share with you many of the tidbits I picked up over the years. If you absolutely have to tune out before the end of the show, make sure to check out the show notes for more details on today's topics and information about my online class, Dental Insurance Design and Management. And thank you so much for making me a part of your day. I'd like to give a shout out to my friends at Synergy Dental Partners for sponsoring our podcast. They know how important the admin team is to our industry. Synergy is a group purchasing organization, or GPO. GPOs reduce your overhead with lower supply costs. They also have partnerships with labs and various service providers. You owe it to your revenue cycle to check them out. They're giving Nobody Told Me That listeners a 2-month free trial and a $200 Darby credit for new Darby customers. For more information, check out the link in the show notes or go to odysseymgmt.com/synergy. And we are back with another edition of Nobody Told Me That. And I've got, some more experts on my podcast this time. So I have a repeat expert, actually. I have Matt Nelson with me from the CDA. That's the California Dental Association. How's it going, Matt?
Good. How are you?
Good, good. And I have a new expert, Michelle Coker from the California Dental Association. Welcome to the podcast, Michelle.
Thank you for having me on.
Well, we are going to talk about how to keep our staff, how to attract them and how to keep them, because this has been such a big pain point in the industry. So Michelle, first thing I want to just go to you. Can you just tell us what your title and role is in the California Dental Association? And then what are you seeing out there as far as retention? And then Matt, we'll go to you.
Yeah. So I am the employment practices analyst with CDA Practice Support. I've been with CDA. This will be my 18th year. My background is I worked in dental practices for many, many years, and then before moving to CDA. My expertise is in employee management, policies, compliance with wage and hour laws, leave of absence management, anything employee related in practices. And, you know, as we were talking about just a few minutes ago, yes, there has been challenges with hiring in dental practices, which was a problem even before the pandemic, which of course then was exacerbated by that. We're definitely back to where we were prior to as far as employee challenges and the number of people having left the industry. There's still challenges with getting employees into the business and whatnot. I am not hearing as many complaints, but it's still happening for sure. For sure.
Okay. Yeah. And Matt, your role over there, you're the practice management analyst, right? What do you do over there?
Yeah, I really spend a lot of time helping members with, you know, buying or selling a practice, any kind of operation within the practice, embezzlement, setting up patient financial systems, patient management situations. So anything like operationally with running the practice.
Okay. All right. And so you're hearing all of the same staffing issues probably.
Yeah. And it, like Michelle said, we know it's still out there. We haven't heard about it as much. I still think there's a lot of room for creativity out there. I think, you know, the days of the dental assisting school pumping out like a lot of really well-trained dental assistants has really slowed down, we know. But there's a lot of creativity opportunities out there to go find people and teach them about dental. I had no clue about how fun and how amazing dental was when I was out managing a Walmart or, you know, working for a big company. And getting into dental has been amazing. So
yeah, this is a great industry. I love it. I love it so much. Mm-hmm. I am shocked that you have such a pleasant demeanor, Michelle, being an employment analyst, especially in the state of California. Like, you have an easygoing smile and she's happy. For those of you that are not listening to this on the video, we do have a YouTube channel, just to remind everybody. So you can see, like, you look like a very happy, pleasant person. I always expected somebody who did employment law in California to be very grumpy. So...
Oh,
So congratulations on not being grumpy.
Thank you. No, I absolutely love what I do. I've been in dentistry over 30 years, so I love supporting this profession. And I find the greatest joy in being able to educate somebody on these complex laws in order to allow mm-hmm. them to lead confidently. So it's hard to make decisions or to lead a team when you don't understand how you could do it within the letter of the law. And that's what I love doing.
Oh, I love to hear that. Well, it's hard to lead a team when you've got all these different generations, which is what mm-hmm. I wanted, you know, to get into, and you guys wanted to get into this. Like, so we have so many different generations staying in the workforce for longer, some for longer, and some just coming out and saying, what the heck is all this? These email and protocols and KPIs, what is all this stuff? So we have a ton of different mindsets, ages, and I was sharing earlier in the pregame that every time somebody gives me the definition of what all the generations are, I immediately forget them because it just seems like I think I'm Gen X, but I was just, no, I think I'm Gen Z. And then I was just told before the show that I'm actually Gen X. And that rings a bell. So can you walk through who these different generations are in case someone out there just hasn't bothered to look up what they are?
Yeah. So the first one we'll talk about is the silent generation. And that's really anyone born from 1928 through 1945. And it represents about 2% of the workforce right now. They are characterized as dependable, loyal, and straightforward. Next, you have the baby boomers. They are born from 1946 to 1964. They still represent about 25% of the workforce. And they are generally seen as optimistic, competitive, and viewed as workaholics. Next is Gen X, generally 1965 to 1981. This is the one I was telling you about that's kind of funny because depending on the researcher, it might end in 80, might end in 81. I was born in 81, so I do have, I'm not sure, but we'll say Gen X. So 1965 to 1981, Gen X is about 33% of the workforce. They are flexible, informal, and independent. Also, what's interesting is that about 55% of startups were done by Gen X.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Then you have millennials, born from 1982 to 2000. That's about 35% of the workforce. So our biggest chunk of the workforce now are millennials. They are competitive and achievement-oriented. And then Gen Z, so they're trickling in now. About 5% of the workforce are Gen Z from 2001 to 2017, born in those years. And they're global and progressive. And okay. that's the main ones right now, the main players. There's Gen Alpha is now, but they are not going to be in the workplace for a while.
So Gen Alpha is the next one. Oh, okay. See, I got to get all this straight. Got to get this right. Okay. I wonder why they didn't go with Gen Y, but I guess that just creates a whole bunch of memes.
I think they did, actually.
Millennials are considered Gen Y.
Yeah.
Really? Okay. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, then I got to get ready for my memes for this particular episode. Got to get some going. So in dentistry, is there, well, actually, let's go back just a second because we went over generations, but it's still overwhelmingly in the I know there's more female dentists coming up. I don't know if it's switched yet, but in the employment, non-dentists, it's mostly female still, like it's overwhelmingly female, or are those numbers changing too?
As far as dentists, I am seeing an increase. Mm-hmm. I mean, over the course of my career, we're at about 50-50 now as far as female dentists.
Okay.
Who are you know, entering and coming out of school. But you are correct that the supporting teams for practices are primarily female, for sure, still.
Okay.
Absolutely. Okay.
So that's the landscape of the dental industry, just so we kind of set the stage. And of course, everybody listening has their own generational makeup in the office, but the people that I interact with the most are probably my age, Gen X's, and they're managing offices, and they are frustrated with trying to figure out, you know, how to please everybody, because it was really easy to please me. I would just be happy with a thank you and the raise. Like that's my generation, right? And yep. Matt's nodding his head, yep. Like, yep, that yep. fits. But the younger, it seems, generation, I always feel so like get off my lawn when I say younger generation, but I'm just going to say it a lot this time, so we'll just deal with it. The younger generation seems to want more and more often feedback. So that seems to be what makes them happy. I'm sure money makes them happy too, but I just keep hearing appreciation is like the big love language, you know, that they have. So walk me through, how is this, how are the older generations, do you see, dealing with this? Do you hear a lot of how the heck do I do this? Or what are you guys hearing? What are the problems you're hearing?
Well, it's kind of the age old story, right? Each generation imagines itself to be more intelligent than the last, or, you know, wiser than the one that comes before it. Each generation has its own values, customs, and languages. So I think what we're hearing is exactly what you're saying, you know, kind of a misunderstanding. We're of a generation, like you said, Gen X, that's very independent. So as a leader, you don't necessarily lean into being somebody who provides the feedback on a regular basis, who sets the stage for employees by providing expectations and job descriptions, and then following up with performance evaluations and whatnot. You know, there used to be a time when somebody could say, just be grateful to have a job, right? But now you really need to provide the guidance. The millennials really crave that feedback. They crave leadership that provides learning opportunities, whether that's external learning or even just learning in the business. So the new thing is there are more generations working together than ever before. There's five different generations who are all working together. So a leader needs to really understand how to navigate all these different generations that were shaped by anything from the Great Depression to Vietnam War to, you know, the dot-com boom and the age of mass shootings and, you know, life after 9/11 and all these various things that influence each generation. So there really needs to be an understanding of all of that, and in order to be a leader, it's complex now. You can't just give somebody a task without them asking, why am I doing this?
Okay, so I have a question, because you brought up two pretty traumatic topics, which is, you know, the age of mass shootings and 9/11. How does that affect an employee's mindset, and how should I, does that mean that I invest more in safety trainings, or is it deeper than that? What do you mean by taking that into account?
Well, I think it's important to understand, you're correct, safety training for sure, but it's not just safety, it's transparency. I know what I hear is employees want to know what the rules are. If there is a feeling that you aren't being transparent as an employer, they'll seek the information elsewhere. Matt and I were talking earlier about how I read somewhere that employees, younger employees, are Googling the answers for the questions they used to ask their parents, right? So employees now want to know why they're doing what they're doing. They're fact-checking. They want to know that you're being transparent. So as a leader, especially as an employer, you need to have the policies in place. You need to have your practices be consistent with your policies. If you're not, employees tell themselves a story about whatever it is, right? So transparency is super important as a leader in order to ensure that safety, because we're hardwired to feel on guard. Right. So as long as an employer is providing a consistent message of safety, of teamwork, of transparency, of vulnerability and acceptance, and then your employees will be likely to trust you. Right. It's a matter of trust.
Yeah, I think just to go off what you were saying, too, is I think that's where you really started seeing the shift with Gen X, too, was Gen X was the first workforce to really start pushing for work-life balance, and it has progressed with each generation after Gen X of a bigger focus on work-life balance. And Michelle's a huge proponent of mental health care, and you know, that's become something that's extremely important to the younger generations. And Michelle can talk about some of those apps that she likes.
Yeah, I was going to say smaller employers don't necessarily have medical coverage, but there are opportunities where an employer can support employees with, you know, an EAP type program or a mental health program, or even even apps, right? Headspace, Calm app, things like that can be provided at a discount or free of charge to employees. Okay. So rather than spending a great deal of money to provide medical coverage, things like that, they can, there are other ways to support employees' mental health. I mean, even, you know, we know that there's been an increase in paid sick leave here in California from 3 days to 5 days. Providing a mental health day by using a, you know, to an employee who you can clearly see is struggling could absolutely, you know, create a loyalty and retention with your employees too.
Yeah, I'm really glad you brought up the burnout and the mental health aspect. One of my really good friends, Lynn Leggett, she's here in Virginia. She kind of discovered this niche. She did a course on burnout, and the response and request for coaching after that was way beyond what she expected. So she did a little bit of a shift to that. But we talk about all the time how much it surprised her and how much it affects, I guess, our Gen X is who's mostly calling her. And it is a real big issue. And then Dental Post just came out with this salary survey. And in the at the end of it, for insurance coordinators and administrators, said that about 30% of us are planning on retiring in about six years years. And just talking to other colleagues of mine, I'm afraid they're going to burn out even more than that, like earlier than that. So how often do you get the Hail Mary calls from people saying, I don't know if I can do this anymore?
Yeah, I was going to say, Matt probably hears that more with the practice transition calls.
Yeah, it's really, you know, really try to make sure they know they're not alone. That it's, you know, the the pandemic took a toll on a lot of people. A lot of things changed and, you know, they're not alone. And that's the important thing is, like, there's so many resources. There's so many people to talk to. And, you know, most people, when I get off the phone with them, just the fact that they know that there's other people feeling the same way out there, or that a lot of people feel the same way, is very comforting to them. You know, it's like, okay, it's not just me. I'm not doing this alone. I'm not the only one experiencing this. And, you know, I think that goes back to when we talked about those, the generational differences again, like Gen X, Millennial, Gen Z, we've experienced so much stuff, you know, that, that focus on time and being with your family and doing the things you enjoy, you know, those have all taken a greater importance in our lives now than previous generations that were viewed as workaholics.
These apps you mentioned, Michelle, are they meant to be like solo apps, or are they meant to be like get a buddy in the app, or within the team you can kind of talk to each other? I mean, I'm just trying to figure out like how we can offer it and have that be something that they actually utilize, and, you know, we want to utilize something like that.
Right. I think from an app standpoint, they're not meant to be a buddy type app, not any that I'm aware of. They're a singular, you know, app that's available. You know, employers can often, you know, get them at a discount, like the Calm app and whatnot. I mean, I'm not promoting any particular app. I have done some research. Yeah. Non-promoting here. I've done some research on the information that's out there for employers to start conversations with their teams. There is so much information out there to help start conversations with their teams about where they are with mental health, how to support their teams. I mean, there are companies out there and organizations out there that provide a number of resources that can help support an employer to have those conversations, to open those conversations, to start leading into the vulnerability. If they're able to step into the vulnerability, then they lead with the vulnerability, and then employees are more apt to share. You know, I can't say in the research that I found that, you know, the younger generations, they don't want to share. They'd rather, you know, leave a conversation. We know they're non-confrontational. They're not going to speak up. So there needs to be a platform, right, and an opportunity. And sometimes it requires the meeting after the meeting, because they're not willing to step mm-hmm. up and share what's going on. Maybe there's conflict. We know there's conflict in small practices, right? There were many, many years ago, and they're going to continue, right? Oh, small groups of people getting together.
For sure.
Right? So if you're having a meeting yep. where you set the stage where you allow employees to share, you may still have employees who won't share, right? So then there's that meeting after the meeting. So being a leader that sets that stage, allows, you know, employees to share openly. Perhaps you have an older employee who says, oh, that's a bad idea. You know, you've got to shut that down in order to allow employees yeah. to share, even, you know, just throwing out an idea that might work or maybe it won't work. Right. So create, mm-hmm. Meetings where open dialogue is encouraged for sure. And talk about either conflict or, you know, ways to do something different in processes, whatever it is.
One of the, an article I read a long time ago, talked about asking your new employee as part of the onboarding, how do they want to be approached if there yeah. is an issue? Yeah. And, you know, I thought, oh, that's interesting, because I always just thought, well, why wouldn't you just tell me? But you're right. Like, and I'm thinking of my son who's 23, he probably would want to get a Slack message or a text and then let him think about it and then talk. So we can't get rid of the team meetings, right? We have to have our team meetings. We have to have the issues come out. So if I'm hearing you correctly, please correct me if I've got the flow wrong. We talk about it. We have the issues, kind of try to keep down the negative talk, but then you would follow up afterwards, or at least give them a venue for them to come and talk to you anonymously or text with you anonymously. Is that what I'm hearing? Like, give them some way to follow up?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there, okay. yes, there needs to be an understanding that, you know, if there isn't anything, if there's something that you want to share that you didn't necessarily feel comfortable sharing during the meeting, come talk to me. Yeah. That creating that open, okay. you know, that open door, non-judgmental conversation would be super important. Okay. Yeah. Be specific.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Cause I'm just thinking, I can't, gosh, over the years, I probably had many meetings where either I was a facilitator or I was the manager, and I would say, okay, anybody have any issues? Okay. All right. Going, gone. Like, kind of like, well, if you don't bring it up now, we're not, that's it. And now right. I'm realizing from what you're saying there, if there were, and there weren't any older people in there or younger people, but if there were, I could have been really discouraging that comment from them. So that's interesting. Okay.
No more speak now or forever hold your peace situations.
Yeah, so I need to stop that, right? Okay. Yeah. Darn it. How else do I get things across to my son? Yeah. Thanks a lot, Matt.
Hey, yeah, you know what? That's why I love the generational topic, because my daughter's a Gen Z. I spend a lot of time trying to figure out, like, is my message landing on her?
Yeah. Yeah, no, that is a lot of what I wonder as well. So, so let me ask you then, where do personality tests roll up into all of this? Because I've been hearing about DISC for years, used DISC for years, Forte as well, and others. I mean, there's so many others, whatever you like, but are those now evolved enough to take into account the generational differences too, or are there specific tests that will help you with that?
Oh, that's a big question.
Sorry.
Yeah, no. I'm thinking about that here. You know, we've done those types of tests at work. I think they, from a personal standpoint, when those are taken into account, they help me understand who I am mm-hmm. and how I approach work. So I think as a leader, if you're reviewing, and this kind of comes into understanding who your team is, right? You know, mm-hmm. I was reading this great analogy about playing the game of checkers and the game of chess. Mm-hmm. Both boxes okay. hold a game board that looks identical. Checker pieces, they essentially look the same other than being different colors, right? If you're to lead your employees in that manner, checkers pieces, you're going to get mediocre, if not good performance. But if you okay. come at it as somebody who understands chess pieces and what each team member can do, you can then manage the relationships, manage their strengths, their personalities, and get the best performance from employees. So learning those personality styles and really understanding those key elements would make you mm-hmm. more of a, you know, an excellent chess player. And
yeah,
you know, using those personality tests can really be key to getting the best performance out of your employees, for sure. And your employees, they're understanding their, how they, you know, their own personalities and work styles as well.
Okay. Are there signs that, that these generations give off when they're not happy? Is there a way to figure that out? Like if I'm a, you know, a baby boomer, I'm just thinking of my dad. He's classic baby boomer workaholic. When he wasn't happy, he would just be angry. Like there was no, very stoic, just angry. Are there tip-offs that you all are aware of?
I don't know about tip-offs, but a lot of avoidance from the younger generations, like mm-hmm. just avoiding conflict altogether or shutting down or never showing back
ghosting.
Up to work or, you know, ghosting.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, yeah, that's true. Ghosting. Yeah, they are known for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then, you know, the older generations are more straightforward, more direct communicators. They're going to let you know how they feel and what's going on. Mm-hmm. So there is a big difference between the direct communication and the complete avoidance.
Okay. So during your transitions, because I know you're talking to people who are merging teams, what are they doing to manage expectations with different generations, different teammates now that are all of a sudden supposed to work together?
Oh, gosh.
They're struggling.
They're struggling.
Okay. Yeah. You know, you have generally a younger generation purchasing, you know, perhaps purchasing mm-hmm. a practice that, you know, an older generation owned, entering mm-hmm. into a practice where things are done a certain way. You know, employees are generally old, you know, and a lot of times they're older than their employer, and there's yeah. a lot of struggle, and there's a lot of, hopefully a lot of conversation, you know, they call us and, you know, there's conflict happening, and it's really walking mm-hmm. them through an understanding of where to come from, you know, baby steps, and trying to educate them on how to have these conversations, have these team meetings, open forums, mm-hmm. but it needs, you know, people have to come into the conversations, both willing to compromise and understand, right? And that's really hard to, that's really hard to do. Bringing in outside communication coaches, right? You know, that may
okay.
mean they need more education as a team.
Okay. Okay. So a facilitator could help out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Or are you talking about like a coach for the doctor or the manager? Are you talking about like a coach for them?
No, more for like a team facilitator, you know, trying okay. to get some communication okay. amongst the team. If it's really, really bad. Yeah, it's really bad.
Okay.
Again, leading transparently, having policies in place, being consistent, being mm-hmm. open, leading with vulnerability, you know, they understanding these employees likely have more experience, and there's a value to, yeah. to cross mentoring, right? Not just it's my way yeah. or the highway, right? That understanding where each generation is coming from, and really everybody can learn from one another.
Just a reminder to check out the companies who support the show. My friends at Synergy Dental Partners are offering 2 free months to try out their lower prices for labs, supplies, and select software services. To sign up, visit odysseymgmt.com/synergy, and the link is also in the show notes.
Right. Yeah. Well, leading with vulnerability just sounds scary. I can just say that right off the bat.
Oh, so, yeah.
Matt,
oh,
you were yeah. going to say something.
Yeah. you know, Michelle and I have this conversation a lot. I think, you know, when doctors go make that big step, that transition to ownership, there's a lot of time invested in learning how to be a great dentist and how to communicate with your patients and how dental yeah. insurance works. And, you know, I don't know, you know, if there's as much time spent on leadership courses or understanding the HR laws. And that's a conversation Michelle and I have a lot, is that, you know, there, you know, we got to find a way to do like leadership and HR training for doctors mm-hmm. that are wanting to make that big jump in the next year or two yeah. so that, you know, they can be out in front of this stuff. Mm-hmm. They can be thinking about generational differences and HR laws, because it's HR laws is a very painful thing, and leadership is a very painful thing to learn on the fly.
for sure. Mm-hmm. And people don't realize how expensive it actually is too. Yeah. So talking about turnover, what do you guys, I mean, have you done any studies, CDA themselves, or do you know what the cost is of turnover to an office? Do you have those stats available?
It can range. Now, CDA has not done the research. The research I generally follow tends to be through SHRM, which is the Society for Human Resource Management. They estimate anywhere between $5,000 to $20,000. You know, it can be higher, but that's kind of the general range. And that would be recruiting, training, you know, turnover costs. Mm-hmm. And if that's happened, it can be so costly, which you mentioned onboarding earlier. Matt and I did a lecture last year about the importance of effective onboarding. What I do find is that employees are often brought on board and just kind of expected to work, right? That the assumption is every dental practice operates the same. And fundamentally, they do, right? Everybody's doing dentistry and sterilization processes should be the same or similar and you know, procedures and whatnot. But every office culture operates differently. So having a very strong prepared onboarding where an employee feels that they are integrated into the inner workings of, you know, how employees talk to each other, communication, right? How do we communicate? We talked earlier about technology and texting and whatnot, set the stage for how do we communicate if we're going to be late to work? Is it a text message? Is it a call? You know, those inner workings of, you know, when do you call, when do you text, how do we talk to each other? How do we operate our meetings, right? Open forum, open communication, really getting those cultural differences. I mean, everybody at every generational level needs all of that, to be successful.
If there's something that I hear the biggest complaint about is, All I do now is text my employees. My employees call in late, but they text. Mm-hmm. They don't call. My employee quit over text. My employee accepted the job over text. And I think there's this sort of feeling that, well, I guess we have to take it because this is what it's become. But is there, I mean, I love to see you shaking your head. For those of you that are audio only, she's shaking her head already.
Yeah.
How, that's not my preferred way of having trackable conversations, because as an HR person in my office as the manager, I have to have trackable conversations. I have to have a log, documentation. So how do I keep them from doing that at 4 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah. You've got to set the standard. Your policies, and this is where I get to put my HR hat on. Your policies have to set the standard.
Oh, good.
When is it okay to text? When do you have to call? It's really easy to hide behind a text message. Perhaps, you know, I'm running late, you know, I'm stuck in traffic. That's an acceptable text message. But if you're calling in sick, you've got to call. If there's an emergency, you have to set the standard for how employees will be notified in the event of an emergency. I mean, we've had a number of, you know, floods and civil unrest and lots of reasons in the last few years that required employers to communicate in a prompt, efficient, and really reliable manner. You have to set the standard of how that's going to work. And if you have employees, let's say you have employees who aren't familiar with texting or aren't comfortable with texting, you need to bring them up to speed. And same with employees who don't want you to call or are not willing to pick up the phone because they prefer a text message, right? You've got to set the standard. And you need to discipline employees who won't follow the standard, right? So it's got to be a balance of what is the best effective and reliable and expected source of communication.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned, we talked about onboarding, and that's pretty cool, actually, that you guys taught a class on that, because what I've seen over the years is that onboarding is like it's an afterthought. And pretty much I'll hear from doctors, I can't spend all this time having them do all this. Like I'm hiring because I'm short staffed. I need them on the phone immediately. And so there's a disconnect between Well, I always say to them, and tell me if I'm wrong here, but I always say you don't want them having any impact on your revenue without training them, because you can upset a patient, you can tell them the wrong thing and tell them we accept insurance and we don't. And that's all sorts of liability involved. And I mean, I'm so nervous, but there's a lot of dentists out there that just are so desperate to get somebody in the office. So I don't want you to recap the whole course because that's a lot, but what are you finding as far as the acceptance of having to actually have a proper onboarding? Is this something that's easy for them to accept, or are they still fighting you along the way?
Yeah, it's, I mean, I get it. I've ran an office and I've been shorthanded, and, you know, I think there's a way that you can still have people answer phones, but still have a proper onboarding or training plan in place so that they're not just feel like they're thrown in right away. I personally don't get a lot of pushback because I feel like people know what the right thing to do is to keep that employee. You got to do it. You got to bring them on. You got to give them the training. You got to do a proper onboarding so they can see where their work area is. And I still think about my first day. My first day as an office manager in dental, I had to clean out my desk. As I got hired as an office manager, I had to clean out the desk. Oh, I had no idea. I had no dental experience at all. So, like, I was shredding papers. I had no idea whether I needed them or not because they were like, here you go. So I was like, well, when in doubt, shred it. I figured it out, sure. But, I'm a Gen X, so I'm independent. Everybody is that same generation, and not everybody will just figure it out. Some people, want the formal training or want the formal introductions. Younger generations identify themselves as technology addicts or cell phone addicts. So, those face-to-face greetings and getting to know people are really important, and probably more important that you have one-on-one introductions instead of just like a, hey, everybody, here's the new person. Go say hi. That's going to put them in a very uncomfortable position. So, thinking about those kind of things too.
Yeah. So your onboarding also includes getting to know the team versus not just software, HIPAA, OSHA. Like you're talking about onboarding to the rest of the team. I'm sorry, Michelle, go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, no, that's fine. Just I'm sitting here thinking about any of the feedback that I've received, and I definitely get those calls where the member says, oh, you're right, I should have waited. I hired somebody and it just went downhill and I should have waited and I should have taken your advice. So I think even, the worst decisions are made when you make them in haste, right? And I think there has been a shift where they are quick to want somebody quickly. But they're realizing now, because they've made these bad decisions and had some turnover, that they are taking their time, even though they're desperate. I think there's a time where cross training is necessary, so your employees are able to step in at that time when you're shorthanded. I think you need to recognize those team members that are picking up the slack in the meantime. But in the long run, they'll appreciate it if you bring some, you make a thoughtful decision to bring somebody in, everybody's onboarding and bringing somebody up to speed. And then those employees who have had an excellent onboarding experience, studies show they stay longer. They're more loyal because you've spent more time and they feel the investment. I think it's something like 70% of employees who have had a poor onboarding experience leave within the first 3 to 6 months of, being brought on to a position. So it pays in the long run. And I think our members who, over the course of the last few years, who have just been quick to get a warm body in the chair, are learning that they have to spend a little bit more time.
So let's talk about there's a misconception. I don't know. Maybe it is the right thing. There's a conception. There's a myth or something said about the younger generations coming in that they don't have the same social skills as maybe our generations, which kind of cracks me up because I know plenty of people my age with zero social skills. So, but that is the myth, right? That they are younger, they spend more time on the computer, they're not as outgoing. Is that something that the data upholds? I mean, is that true?
Yeah,
for the most part.
Okay. Go ahead, Matt.
The older generation are skilled team players. Mm-hmm. And the younger generation, like, they socialize online. So the face-to-face interactions are different.
Okay.
There's one thing that really stood out in a lot of this research that we did that I found really interesting was, there were several. But one thing that stood out when it came to, like, even giving feedback to somebody is, I think millennials get this perception that they're the trophy generation, that everything's handed to them, everybody, you know, you get rewarded for participating.
Mm-hmm.
And, when I was looking at research, so 3 out of 4 millennials, when involved in some kind of conflict situation, will actually look at internally as like their behavior in the situation involving the conflict. Mm-hmm. And only 1 in 4 non-millennials do that. So, the younger generation, there's not enough data right now on Gen Z in the workforce, but what we're seeing is like the younger generation has like a strong sense of accountability. They will look and see what they did or what they could have done better.
Oh, that is interesting. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, okay. So how am I as a manager supposed to communicate then with somebody who doesn't have a lot of social skills? Is it on me to keep sifting through to find the right person, or is there something that I can do? Are there classes that I can, have this person go through? I mean, what would you do? You find a diamond in the rough, but this is a pretty big rough, right? So
it's funny, nicely, Michelle wants to say something, so I just want to say one thing real quick, is that I think what
she's chomping at the bit.
I see it.
Across generations, I think as a leader, regardless of the generation that you're having, to work with, it's how you approach a situation. So if you have an employee who has an attendance issue, and this could be in any age range, how you mm-hmm. approach it, rather than just saying, you and I have an issue, we need to meet at 2:00. Well, a younger generation individual is going to avoid that meeting at all costs. They're going to stress about it. There's no transparency about what it's about, right? An older generation, not sure how they would react. I know I would stress about it, but I think it's, if you have an issue with an employee, ask for a meeting, give it 24 hours, mm-hmm. let them know, you and I, or maybe not, maybe it's an afternoon. You have a conversation in the afternoon. You and I, we need to have a chat. We're going to talk about your attendance. Let's chat at 2:00. I think, if you approach it with 90% of communication can resolve in a timely and respectful manner. I know we have a problem. Mm-hmm. I know we can work it out. Let's have a chat at 2:00. Then approach it with, okay. Hey, I've noticed you've been late, 6 times in the last 2 weeks. Fact, right? Like, separate it from feelings. I think it's happening because you don't understand that, what our schedule is. So let's talk about this. It's upsetting me, right? It's creating a problem. Mm-hmm. We're running behind. Your coworkers are having a problem with the fact that you're late. They're having to pick up the slack. I need you to be here on time. Can you share with me, what's going on? Let's talk about it. As a leader, I need to be prepared to be wrong. You may hear that, the manager said it was fine to be late, right? Maybe I just started taking some new medication and I'm sleepy in the morning and, I need a couple weeks of, coming in a little late, right? So maybe the employer didn't know. Or, they need to come up with if there isn't a good solid reason, then perhaps, mm-hmm. Just let them know what they need to do to comply, and really have open dialogue, but really keep it, an open conversation about what's happening. And I think that can come at any generation, mm-hmm. is resolving that type of conflict and addressing it in a straightforward manner. Openly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, Matt.
Yeah, I mean, we know with the older generations, they want direct communication and they follow the rules. So maybe even the conversation is something along the lines of, hey, we messed up here. Here's how we fix it going forward. The younger generation, we know they're more introspective. So they already know potentially where they made a mistake. And on top of that, they also want to question and create the rules. If they don't understand them, they want to create them or recreate them and make them make sense. And so, you know, maybe the conversation is more open, like, hey, help me understand what happened here. What went wrong? Yeah. How do we fix it going forward? And making it, like Michelle said, more of a dialogue, more of a conversation. You know, just the approach is going to be different versus like the direct approach versus the let's talk about it.
I think a lot of people are going to need coaching on this because I would say probably midpoint of my managerial career, had I been faced with this situation, my thought process would be, they knew the rules, they signed the employee handbook. I'm having a conversation with them to figure out why am I trying to get all these reasons why it's okay when they signed the handbook and it said it's not okay. So do you see where like, that's where my, I guess, Gen X head is. So, and luckily I don't have employees anymore, but it's thankfully, because obviously I think I would need some coaching in this because I would be saying, what are you doing?
Well, there's so much information out there now. Like they can see, you know, when we started working, or maybe even older generations started working, like you knew how your job operated. Now you can go on social media and go to a place like Glassdoor and see like how all these companies operate and all their offerings and all their benefits. So like, you know, there's so much information at fingertips now. It's like, well, I don't have to deal with this. I can hop over here and get something different. You know, it's just a whole different ballgame now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and I definitely would want to get better at it because I would want to retain the employees. I mean, as you said, it's super, super expensive to do that. And I see overhead is just going up, up, up everywhere and doctors are feeling it. So I have one question about the concept of conflict resolution. It's definitely not something that's taught in dental schools, along with communications or any of that kind of stuff. I know for people, if they've listened to this podcast or any other management podcast, obviously you want to take steps to improve before this becomes an issue. But conflict resolution is not typically something that is recommended at, like from the podium. I don't hear very many speakers saying that. We always talk about let's learn the different languages. Are there any classes like that, like a conflict resolution, like communications, interpersonal communications? Do you guys have favorite books, favorite authors, favorite classes that you would recommend for this type of thing?
It's funny, actually, did a presentation with my colleague Janelle. We did a presentation at CDA Presents on conflict resolution.
Okay.
And it was a well-attended course. It was a lot of fun. And as far as books go, I think, you know, Five Dysfunctions of a Team always pops up as like a critical book and understanding how to identify and resolve conflict in the in the workplace. And I know Michelle's got probably a whole list of books.
I don't. I and actually we'll rely on you for this conflict management type content. He did the research and did the course. You know, I think, as I had said earlier, if you know the employment laws, it makes it easier to manage, right? The conflict and know what you can do. So I tend to rely on, you know, compliance with various laws and things to help guide those conversations because, you know, the more you know, the better you feel or the more confident that you feel to enter into these conversations.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. For sure. But I'll definitely link that. That is actually a really good book, Matt. So glad you mentioned that. I'll link that in the show notes. Was there one big takeaway you think from your conflict resolution class that you'd want to share or some big like aha moment that most people have in that class?
It's really, you know, so much about communication and seeking to understand, you know, and understanding that different people communicate differently and what people are saying may not be what they're really trying to say, or you don't really know what's happening in someone's life outside. So it's really important if something hits you wrong or something strikes you wrong, like pause, like just, you know, pause and try to figure out and, you know, circle back with the person later and be honest. Hey, when you said this, it made me feel like this. You know, but don't just assume negative intent, you know, assume positive intent. And, you know, nobody woke up today and they thought, like, you know what, I'm going to go be a jerk to Michelle at work because that's fun.
Yeah.
You know,
like, we've talked about that before. Just, yeah, absolutely. Assume positive intent.
Oh, that Matt does that? That's terrible.
Yeah,
Matt.
He does. He has to apologize to me all the time.
Little brother syndrome. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you know, even the CDA has to have these workshops.
That's right. I think, you know, it's important for an employer, especially, you know, when I talk about compliance, to have these conversations and be super clear from a performance aspect. I think we mentioned it earlier that employees want feedback. Mm-hmm. They want guidance. They want you to lay out the expectations. They want you to provide them, you know, the performance metrics so they can meet them. They can question them if they don't seem to make sense. But it gives an employer an opportunity to document these conversations because, you know, the relationship can go one of two ways. You can end up with a stellar employee who craves opportunities to learn and to grow and to excel in your business and stay a long-term employee, versus having to make a decision about an employee where you've set the expectations and they fail to meet them consistently. And you might have to make that decision to separate employment. You have a documented, you know, you've had an opportunity to document these conversations and protect yourself, right? Because employers, unfortunately, can't really rely much on at-will employment anymore and need to document these performance expectations and where they've tried to mentor and coach. So from a leadership standpoint, they have to lean into these conversations and lean into these things just from a liability standpoint too.
Yeah, I like that because I am always so worried about the fine or the audit or the lawsuit is just, you know, terrifying to a lot of people.
I always like to say a separation or a termination should never come as a surprise, if possible, right? It should never come as a surprise, especially based on attendance or performance or, you know, behavior in some way. A business decision is completely different. But if you can avoid it coming as a surprise, then you know you've done your job as an employer to try to make that relationship work.
Well, then I have one question for you, Michelle, because this actually has come up in classes. And I just say I don't know the answer, you know, definitely check with HR. But since I've got you here, there's so the situation of you're going through, you're following the manual, you've done the talk, you've written them up. And now it's time. Let's talk about being late. Now it is time to let them go. You've exhausted the process. What happens if you don't let them go and it continues? And then one day you just say, okay, forget it. And then you do drop the hammer. Are there consequences to not having followed the guidelines?
So that's kind of a layered question. So if you have a specific set of guidelines outlined in your manual, now maybe you have a disciplinary policy that says first this, then this, then this. You don't follow that.
Okay.
You're really setting a precedent that employees can push the boundaries, right? And then you have the rest of your team who's suffering and it's creating a toxic environment because, you know, you're letting employees get away with murder, so to speak, right? And you're not following your own policies. Sure. In turn, if you aren't following your own policies, that can get you into trouble if there's a third party that comes looking around saying, well, you terminated somebody, but you didn't follow your step-by-step policies, right? You just decided you were done one day and you didn't do the verbal warning and the written warning and then the final warning, right? You just said, that's it, I'm done, right? You didn't follow your own policy. So there's a lot of layers to that. First and foremost, always follow your policy. You don't have to have a formal policy, but if you've set a precedent that you do certain things, follow that. Outside of that, you know, consistency is key. It can get you into trouble to manage poor performance. You know, just allowing bad behavior to go on and on and on. There have been cases where perhaps a third party inquiry says, well, you let it go on for 2 years. Why didn't you manage it before that, right? And so then you have to justify why you allowed a certain behavior to go on and what was the straw that created the problem. This is why managing consistently is so important, because managing poor behaviors for 2 years, it wasn't a big deal, clearly. And then suddenly it was. You have to be able to justify that. So better that you're consistent, managed from the beginning. Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you for that answer. Cause I feel like there are times in every manager's life where you feel like you are managing poor performance, and it's very frustrating because it drags everybody down. And sometimes it's the dentist that doesn't want to actually, you know, make it happen. And I have found that the hardest times that I've had with a dentist and trying to convince them it's is the right thing to let this person go, it's always been the assistant. And it is because that's the number one impact that they're going to have is on the dentist. And the dentist is like, but I'm so used to this person. I don't even talk to them. They're just right next to me, but I don't talk to them. Well, they're making life hell for everybody else in the office.
It's true.
So that has anecdotally been the issue.
Yeah. I hear from a lot of office managers, they get frustrated and call me because they want the employer to act, and they see and they hear about, you know, what's happening with the team and the employer. I mean, hard, right? I've never personally had to terminate somebody, but I would not want to be in that position, but you need to be in that position in order to support the rest of your team. Right. It shows that you're leading and that you're supporting those that it's bringing down, right? That it's dragging down and creating that toxic environment.
Right. Right. And, you know, if that completely makes you feel uncomfortable and that's not what you want to do as a manager, it's okay to reassess and decide if you're in the right position. I mean, that's okay. But being a manager, part of it is the bad times.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. So Matt, you are just nodding your head like, yes, yes. So
I'm the opposite of Michelle. I've had to fire a lot of people and it never gets easy.
Yeah. I'm with you. I've had to fire more than my share.
Yeah.
But some were easier than others, I will say, but that's beside the point.
So a little off topic from termination. I do want to talk about, I think one of the most interesting shifts, and Michelle and I had a conversation about it today, is with the millennials, and I think with the technology, and like we talked about, like the access to everything. Something that we've seen is that the males from millennial down have become less assertive, and females have become more assertive. So we're starting to see with millennial generations that females are really starting to become the leaders of those generations.
Okay.
I thought that was a pretty cool thing to find there.
Yeah.
Well, I just don't want them to get too assertive, right?
Well, that's true.
Yeah. Take it and run with
Don't go into bully territory.
No. I think that it's really impacted how men and women speak to each other in the workplace. And how we address each other in a professional environment, there's been a shift in that as well. Sure. So employers really need to just address their employees in a different manner. Yeah, I think that's really, really been impactful in the last few years as well.
That's really fascinating, Matt. I hadn't read anything about that. Now I'm going to go check that out because that really is, I mean, that when you have more women dentists that are going to open up practices or lead teams, and you have that dynamic where women are feeling very much more like leaders as the generations go on, you're going to have just these offices that are going to hopefully just outperform. That's kind of exciting, right?
It is exciting. So,
yeah, excellent. Yeah, I like it. Listen, I appreciate you guys coming on. You know, the California Dental Association is always welcome on the podcast. I love that you guys are saying, hey, come on, let's talk. So thank you for coming on. And how can they reach either of you in case they have any questions?
Either by phone or email. My email is probably the easiest to give.
Matt?
Yep. Same with me. Email is matthew.nelson@cda.org.
It's a professional Matthew versus Matt.
Promised my mom I would keep Matthew as my business name.
All right, Mom, he's done good. So, well, I appreciate you all coming on, and I will have links to the resources that we talked about, the book, and I also will have your contact information there. And if you are in the state, the great state of California, to take any CE, please look up the classes that they offer. The CDA's practice management department has always been ahead of the game. I really do love the fact that you put on your own courses. So check that out if you're ever in California. You've got CDA Anaheim coming up. So I'm sure you guys will be busy and speaking at that as well. You guys have how many classes do you think you guys will be teaching?
I have four. We have four.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Five.
Uh-oh. My goodness.
And okay, one we're doing together. Between the two. Excited. Yeah.
Oh, that should be fun.
Oh, office manager training.
Office manager training.
See, this is what I mean. The fact that your society is putting that kind of stuff out is just so commendable. So kudos to you all. All right, dear listeners, as always, I so appreciate that you spend your time with me, and we will see you on the next one.
We're all super busy, so thank you for making time for me today. The show notes will have any links that we referenced in the episode. You can also find links for my book, events, and my online insurance course, Dental Insurance Design and Management. I speak often around the country on management and insurance issues. Come hang out with me in one of my classes. I promise you'll laugh and learn.